You are listening to a special edition Place to Be Nation Pop Blast. Greg and Russell review Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to a very special review pod blast here at Place to Be Nation Pop, your home for pop culture. And I am one half of the hard traveling fanboys, Greg Phillips, doing what is probably only my second pod blast to date. And I am being joined here by my colleague here at Place to Be Nation Pop on the comic side, Russell Sellers, host of DC Post-Crisis Management.
Nailed it.
Absolutely. Russell, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good, man. We just got out of seeing a pretty kick-ass movie. We saw Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Absolutely. We are here to offer our exclusive review of this film, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and Russell kicked it off perfectly right there because this was a movie that a year ago I had very few expectations for. Fast forward to today, and this was, no pun intended, amazing and spectacular. Okay, yes, pun intended. Yes, amazing probably. And spectacular, Russell.
And it was Friendly Neighborhood, too.
And Web Of.
And Web Of, yes. Yes, it covered all of the bases because it got into pretty much every iteration of Spider-Man that has ever been, or at least the ones that are, you know, the most popular versions of the character. Everything from the 616 universe to Ultimate. We got deep onto like some Spider-Man Noir, Gwen Stacy, Spider-Gwen, if you will, and even Spider-Ham making an appearance in this movie.
Yes, and if there's one thing people need to know about me and Russell, it's that we love ham, even if it's a Spider-Ham.
We're hamming it up right now.
Absolutely.
Doing one of those. This is like one of the rare instances where we're actually like being able to record in person. We haven't done this since I broke into the Ho-Ho Loon Studios.
Been a while. And since then, I'm happy to report that our security measures have improved greatly, but we'll see if they hold up in the future. But right now, we're mutually meeting at a agreed-upon time of the day. Yes. No breaking in required.
None whatsoever, because this was a movie that was well worth talking about because I was like you about a year ago whenever this was first mentioned and even some of the first images and even that first trailer didn't do it for me. I was not high on the idea of this movie. I thought that as the resident like big Spider-Man fan of PTBN comics, this just wasn't my bag baby. You know, I wasn't digging on the animation style. It wasn't for me. I'm all for a Miles Morales movie.
Sure, yeah.
I'm fully in on that. I just wasn't digging what I was seeing out of this. Fast forward to today, and I am thoroughly and completely blown away by how good this was.
I think the fear that I had, and a lot of people probably had, is that it felt gimmicky. It felt like Sony was trying to have a gimmick to where they could hold on to the cultural milestone that is Spider-Man in a way that kept him on their side, not just the MCU side. And so I felt maybe it looked a little gimmicky at the time, but man, you want to talk about a creative and original approach to Spider-Man and a creative and original approach really to telling a story in cinema today. Yeah. I thought this was that. The animation style is a great place for us to start, Russell, because... Yeah. That the visual look that I was so concerned about in the beginning a year ago blew my mind. It took me about 2 to 3 minutes to adjust to the way people move in this movie. And once I did, whether it was the use of comic book panels, whether it was the use of just the motion, the use of sound effects, everything that we saw on the screen was just, this looks like the future to me. This looks like the future of big screen superhero animation.
I would agree with that. I felt like the combination of styles is what really made this work so well because the art direction of the film itself, I said right after it was over, was absolutely brilliant. The use of something that I would say is a perfect combination of modern CG animation technique with a little bit of that stop motion feel to it. Like the old claymation style is what it kind of reminded me of. If you found a way to smooth that out and do even more crazy and creative things with it, which is what the filmmakers here achieved in spades. from the action sequences, which will blow your mind. It is crazy what they pull off in this, to even the smaller moments, even like the quieter stuff, whenever it's just Miles having a heart-to-heart with his uncle, which was one of my favorite scenes in the movie. Mm-hmm. And just Miles' interactions with most of these characters in general.
Him and his dad.
Those were great. Everything about the way they structured this movie, I thought, was right on. Just completely brilliant in its pacing. And like you said, the animation style will just keep you pulled into the movie. You can't stop watching it.
Even to the degree that, as anybody that's seen these trailers knows, this is a movie that involves many different Spider-Men and Spider-People from different universes. The way that they managed to make all of them look unique and have their own, almost their own unique animation style to themselves.
Yes, very much so.
Whether it was Spider-Ham, who is very Looney Tunes, Daffy Duck style, Spider-Man Noir, who looks black and white and different from everyone else, and of course, Penny Parker, who is the anime-infused character, has a very anime-infused style to her. So I thought they did a great job with interacting all these characters in a way that worked, that made sense, that never felt like it was taking me out of the movie. It was really immersive.
They did what was making it so immersive for me was that they made Miles Morales our POV character. Yes, you know who Peter Parker is. You know who the Amazing Spider-Man is. They give you that quickie little introduction to him at the beginning, with the, oddly enough, the younger version of Peter Parker being voiced by, surprise, Chris Pine.
Mm-hmm.
And he was great for the little bit that we get him, but then immediately you're introduced to Shameik Moore's Miles Morales. He was great.
Yeah.
His voice acting was right on. That's how I'm going to hear Miles in my head from now on whenever I'm reading any of his Spider-Man comics.
We've been waiting for this moment for a long time since Miles came around, of when we were going to see a sort of iconic take on him. And this is certainly that. This is a version of Miles that the most important thing for Spider-Man, no matter which Spider-Man you're playing, is you have to make him believable and relatable. We have to be able to think that we could live in his world. And Shameik Moore did an amazing job of that as Miles. And this his Miles feels like a Spider-Man for the 21st century. He feels like, it felt very much like a modern, updated take on the earliest Spider-Man stories that we all know and love from various creators and various incarnations in the comics. I thought it was brilliant in that regard, and a lot of that comes down to his performance.
Yeah, I was just enthralled with it, man. Like, I couldn't stop watching the screen. And this is such a sharp turnaround. I'm still kind of processing the fact that I wound up loving this so much that I would put it up there as one of the definitive Spider-Man movies.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get to some of the action scenes, what did you think about some of the other individual performances within the movie? Specifically, I think the character who gets the second most amount of screen time to Miles, and that would be Jake Johnson's Peter Parker, the older Spider-Man, who's like in his late 30s, maybe
late
40s.
Late 30s and possibly 40s, in his 40s. Yeah,
40s, so. Actually.
He was outstanding. I mean, I'm going to sound like a broken record praising all these voice performances, but he was, I thought, excellent. And he was another part when the first trailer came out that I was like, I don't know if I hear him as Peter Parker, but now I can't unhear it. This is the older Peter Parker that I know from the comics, you know, from when he was allowed to age and even age into the future, and he's so believable as a Peter that's, you know, acts like he's very confident and cocky in himself, but is kind of given up on life in a lot of ways until he meets Miles.
Yeah, the story he was telling was kind of heartbreaking, you know, because we're seeing all this stuff fold out in very quick montages, which is something the movie does a lot throughout the movie to establish who these characters are, to give you some of their background without making a 4 to 5 hour movie.
Mm-hmm.
They give you just little quickie montages of them, and surprisingly enough, that's enough. Absolutely. I felt like this is all you really need to get who these characters are.
It's amazing that in the course of creating an origin movie for Miles Morales, they also, the creators of this film, also make an argument against origin movies.
Yes, they did. They made a strong case that you don't need this gigantic setup of origin. You can do it in a quickie montage and still have enough space left to tell your actual story instead of setting up your character, spending so much time doing it. And that was another thing that I worried about coming into the movie was there's going to be a lot for people to try and absorb because you've got so many of these characters, and they're also trying to explain to you the concept of a multiverse, which I guess would be a little more acceptable now because people have gotten so used to comic book movies, and it's such a normal thing, especially for people who may be fans of, say, our favorite shows, Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, things like that. You know, they're used to universe hopping.
Right.
That's not something that we've seen yet in, say, the MCU, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. Mm-hmm. So people are a little more used to the idea, and this movie just goes right for it. Does not give you much of a primer on the idea. It just says there's a multiverse out there, there are multiple dimensions, different types of Spider-Men, Spider-People in general, and you are going to meet a whole host of them and get to know them. One in particular that I was really excited about seeing on screen because it is her big screen debut, and that was Spider-Gwen, Gwen Stacy, as voiced by Hailee Steinfeld. Voiced brilliantly by Hailee Steinfeld. I thought that they absolutely nailed that character, and I loved that in her introduction, and just like the introductions to all of these characters, you get comic book covers with creator names listed on the cover.
Very cool.
Which was such a great way of giving credit to the people who created these characters.
She was brilliant in the movie, and also another example of one of these speed origins that we got, and you still, I cared about her character, genuinely cared about her character by the end of that movie, and I was invested, I was bought in. And that, again, owes to the performance, but it also owes to the writing for being very, very clever, very quick, and very efficient in their storytelling. This movie did not outstay its welcome. This movie did not last an eternity. It moved at a medium pace, Russell.
it moved at a medium pace, yes.
But it was appropriate, and it was, and they managed to make me care and love all of these characters.
It was brilliantly written. The screenplay was written by Phil Lord, but it was produced and co-written by Chris, I believe, Chris Miller. Lord and Miller, people probably remember them from the Lego movie, from Lego Batman. They are, you know, your creative team behind this particular film. And it kind of shows because it's got a lot of their little trappings in it where they focus heavily in on character interactions. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I think helped endear Gwen Stacy to me as well and to the audience in general, that they have her interact with Miles very early. She's, besides Peter Parker, she's the one that Miles interacts with the most because they kind of come at it from similar places. You can tell that they have a lot in common as their individual stories come into focus, and as they spend more time together, they feel like they play very naturally off of one another. So I hope that in the inevitable now sequel to this movie, we get a lot more of Miles and Gwen together because they were a dynamite team.
I cared about their relationship a great deal, and you know, one of the other relationships, so to speak, in this movie is a sort of unique relationship between Miles and his uncle that you mentioned earlier. And I'm not going to say anything to spoil the movie for anybody, but I thought that was such a brilliant and updated version of some of the classic Spider-Man stories we've seen in the past. A lot of the same themes that we might know from Peter Parker apply to Miles Morales just in a different way that makes him unique and stand out and yet also remains true to the core of who Spider-Man is.
Yeah, I was enjoying Mahershala Ali's performance as Miles' Uncle Aaron. And people who are familiar with the comics will immediately know who he is and why he's important to, especially to Miles's story. But this character, his character actually has a lot of history with Peter Parker as well. So when people see this character on screen, it's really cool how he was done. I didn't recognize the voice at first, but I liked the way that he was acting it. It almost made me think it was Donald Glover reprising the role from Spider-Man Homecoming, because mm-hmm. Donald Glover, of course, played him in live action in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
But those are really the most prominent cast members that that really jumped out at me, besides comedian John Mulaney as Spider-Ham.
Spider-Ham, good.
Who was really hilarious in the movie. But I think the one that jumped out for you, and I know he jumped out for me too, Nicolas Cage as Spider-Man Noir.
Yeah, what a surprise from Nick Cage here, because it was a great reminder, because for all the mockery and derision that a lot of us give Nicolas Cage over the years, when he's on, he is really on, and he was on as Spider-Man Noir.
He was absolutely
there. I would have believed he was a lifelong voice actor for right. how well he did with this one and how instantly he got into this character. And this character was so funny and so good.
I want a whole movie of just him and Spider-Ham together, because mm-hmm. they kind of became the unexpected dynamic duo of mm-hmm. this whole exercise. And there's this one bit where Spider-Ham is resting on Spider-Man Noir's shoulder, and I'm just kind of losing I'm just kind of losing it a little bit. It was hilarious.
Another thing that this movie did very well is it gave us so many of these interactions, and it made us want to see more of these movies, want to see sequels with different interactions, different pairings of these characters together.
Absolutely, and we know that there's a spinoff coming with most of the female mm-hmm. spider characters. That should be great. Mm-hmm. All from the same creative team, like mm-hmm. coming from that same perspective. And we know now that there is going to be a sequel. They've already given that one the green light. Go ahead. I don't know where exactly they're going to go with it. I think that maybe the post-credit scene of this movie maybe gave a hint about where they might.
That's a great point, Russell. Everybody be sure to stay until the very end of the credits.
Yes,
the absolutely. Very end.
You have to stay all the way past the credits, because there is a really good and just straight up hilarious post-credit scene. You will not see this coming.
And a beautiful mid-credits tribute to the late, great Stan Lee and Steve Ditko.
Ditko, yes. I'm glad that you brought that up, because I leaned over to you in the movie when we actually get a Stan Lee cameo in this movie, voicing himself. I think mm-hmm. it was one of the last things, one of the last cameos he did before he unfortunately passed. I leaned over and said that this was the best Stan Lee cameo I've ever seen.
Mm.
And I am going to stand by that, because I felt this big lump in my throat whenever he was saying his line. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but guys, this is the Stan Lee cameo to end all Stan Lee cameos. It hit me in my feels harder than any Stan Lee cameo ever, and just because of what he said, too, just because he
mm-hmm.
he voiced the whole point of Spider-Man in a really quick scene. Now, of course, they diverge into a little comedic bit to leave you laughing there at the end, but still, it cut right to the heart of it, and I was like, this is Spider-Man. This is why Spider-Man is good. This is what makes it work.
Mm-hmm.
Straight from the man himself, the creator of the greatest superhero of all time. So I'm blown away. I couldn't say it any more than that. You could have ended the movie right there, and I've been like, this mm-hmm. is the best. This is it.
One last thing to touch on before we get the go-home cue. The villains, we haven't touched on at all.
We haven't.
We're not going to touch on all of it, because there are some twists and turns along the way here. But
sure, we don't want to spoil one big reveal that I didn't see coming, but when it was awesome.
Yes, but one thing that we do want to talk about is the Kingpin.
Oh, God, he was awesome.
Well, first of all, let's just get this out of the way from a guest star here in the studio with us.
Oh, God.
Scott Steiner.
Hi.
The legendary Big Papa Pump. Do you have any comments on Kingpin in this film? He's fat! All right, Scott Steiner, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. This was the fattest Kingpin ever. There is no Kingpin bigger. I don't know how he fit through doors. We saw lots of doors in this movie, and everybody seemed proportionate. Like, the animation style wasn't so weird and crazy mm-hmm. that it felt like this is like taking me out of the movie or anything.
Right.
Until he's on screen, yeah. And then I'm like, you don't fit through things.
He looks like the big neck guy from the internet meme. Yes, but does. If you extended it beyond his top of his head too, it's like his face is like in the middle of this giant blob of neck fat.
And
but I can speak because I have a lot of neck fat. So.
I used to, and I used to, yes. But he was voiced pretty well by Liev Schreiber.
Yeah,
that was something that I did not pick that out as I was hearing him. And then whenever I saw Liev Schreiber's name in the credits, I was like, hold up, was he Kingpin?
One of the things that we should caution people about, this is different than any Kingpin we've heard before.
Very much so.
Very different than that booming, deep, commanding voice that we're used to, the very articulate, kind of aristocratic voice we might be used to with Kingpin. This is a straight New York Kingpin.
He was much more in the vein of Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin, I thought, but with a thick Brooklyn accent.
It's almost like the Kingpin by way of Goodfellas.
Yeah, it was like he was channeling that thick New York accent. Mm-hmm. And it really worked for him. But mm-hmm. one thing that I really appreciated about the movie is that when it starts, you think Kingpin is just going to be this mustache-twirling villain who's evil for its own sake. And then you get the twist about why he's doing what he's doing. And it just... suddenly you're like, this is a great villain for this movie and illustrates why Kingpin is so good as a Spider-Man villain, and now why he's going to be so good as a Miles Morales villain.
Mm-hmm.
So that right there should completely sell you on seeing this movie and seeing future installments of it. There were lots of cameo villains in the movie, too. I really appreciated mm-hmm. how they worked in a few of them. New takes on some villains, too. Mm-hmm. Stuff that I didn't see necessarily coming. One that caught me off guard was Scorpion. I thought that this version of him, really interesting. I want to see more of him. I want to see some background on him rather than him just being a henchman type. I think there's more to this character.
And what was beautiful is by the very nature of the Spider-Verse itself, it establishes that pretty much any take that is your favorite take on Spider-Man exists.
Yes.
It's out there in this universe. But one thing that I don't want to spoil entirely, I will just say that there are homages and nods to some of the more popular takes on Spider-Man from over the years.
There have been. If you are a fan of the Sam Raimi Spider-Man films, all three of them, make sure you are paying attention from the jump in this movie, because those first mm-hmm. 2 or 3 minutes are going to make you incredibly happy.
Yes, very much so.
I was kind of fluttering a little bit. Mm-hmm, like, this is so good. This is like a reminder of all the fun parts of, mm-hmm. of past Spider-Man films. And
including, I don't want to get into the spoilers here, but they recreate some of the classic action scenes.
Yes.
As well, so that was pretty cool.
One other classic scene that is, but they steered fully into it. Mm-hmm. I love that this movie embraced every aspect of the character, from the heartfelt stuff that we talked about to the great action scenes and the silliness,
yes,
that this character represents. And I guess the final thing that we should definitely touch on is the action scenes themselves. Mm-hmm. How did that work for you? Were you involved? Was it too busy, crazy? What did you think of?
Did you have
a favorite one?
First of all, no, it wasn't too involved. I can see where it could have gotten to that point, but it never did for me. It was very creative and energetic, and it kept me engaged the entire time. And I thought, as far as like standout action scenes, to me there were two me that are sticking in my mind right now. One would be the final action scene in the film.
Absolutely, that was killer.
That was outstanding and really a great one. And then the other one was actually a chase sequence where Miles and Peter are trying to escape. Well, Peter's kind of
swinging through the trees.
Yeah, no, actually, when they're swinging through the city trying to escape the cops.
Oh yeah.
That one stood out to me as being particularly great and funny.
Definitely want to echo the climactic fight scene. I thought that was absolutely wonderful, animated brilliantly. And I actually really liked the fight scene at Aunt May's.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that was good.
I thought that that had emotional weight as well as just some really cool moments from Miles. But I don't want to spoil anything too much, but there was one that's not really an action scene. It's just a certain time when our hero swings through the city for the first time mm-hmm. by himself.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was like a stand up and fist pump mm-hmm. moment.
Yeah.
You know, that and this movie is chock full of them, but that was the one where I just wanted to stand up and say, nailed it. Mm-hmm. And
as someone who has never actually read a Miles Morales comic, this movie made me a Miles Morales fan. That's how good it was.
That's what you need to hear. That's what everybody needs to hear to go see this movie. This, if you're not a Miles fan yet, you're about to be.
Absolutely. Well, Russell, thanks for joining me on this pod blast here. We invite you to let us know your thoughts on Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse once you've seen it. You can tweet us. I am at gphillips8652. He is at russell_sellers. And you can also find us at the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook page. Let us know your thoughts on this film once you have seen it. And with that, you can catch us on our regularly scheduled podcast appearances. Russell's on the most recent Marvel Age podcast as well, which just dropped. Talking a little bit about Spider-Man, I'm sure.
Yeah, we had a little bit of Spider-Man talk on the latest episode on 1968 Part 2. We've wrapped up another brilliant year of Marvel Age. We're going to be moving on to 1969, where Spider-Man's going to get a little bit more play, as he tends to do with this Stan Lee run. It is a regular part of the conversation because it just kind of has to be.
Absolutely.
And of course, you'll get me on more DC post-crisis management coming up in the very near future.
Continuing to invade homes and
it's what I do all around
the country.
It's my gimmick, you see. I have to just try to break into people's homes, although that didn't go real well on my last visit. And you guys will be hearing that very soon, as I attempted to pay a visit to the Morris household and found it well guarded. maybe my next visit will be a little easier. I don't know. We'll find out whenever I drop in on a certain member of the PTBN Comics crew. I'm trying not to let him know I'm coming, but much to his chagrin, we're going to be talking a little Final Crisis.
Looking forward to that one. That should be interesting. And as for me, folks, you can catch Hard Traveling Fanboys every week. And this month, we are dedicating it to the King of the Seven Seas from DC Comics, Aquaman. So Aquaman month will continue until the end of the month.
Aquaman!
Aquaman and his noble seahorse. And we will be talking about a lot of Peter David Aquaman and then the movie itself when it comes out later this month. So stay tuned to that. Folks, thank you so much for your time, for your energy, and go out and catch this movie and let us know what you think.
Later, guys. Time I'm walking out, I can hear you telling me to turn around. Fighting for my trust, and you won't back down. Even if we gotta risk it all right now. I know you're scared of the unknown. You don't wanna be alone. I know I always come and go, but it's out of my control.